Welcome to the Always Be Comedy. It's the spin-off. It's the bonus episode. It's Always Be Comedy's Comedy Heroes. The topic today is the great Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Now, like any TV show or series or podcast or whatever it might be, as the in the early days of the show, you come up with new ideas. And so what we think, this might change next week, but if we do the more of the chatty bit up top, and that's Tim and I, we might be discussing, say, comedy news, things that have caught our eye, correspondence from you guys, and so on. And so that this will be, I suppose you can't guarantee. This is like me making it like we're the comedy equivalent of the news agents at the start of this, because you can't guarantee that there'll be a hot topic in comedy to talk about every week. I mean, there probably, there might be, there will be. There is this week, and that's where this has come from. So before we get to Julia Louis-Dreyfus, there were just a couple of things to cover. Thank you, as always, for your correspondence. Now, Graham White, podcast fan in Scotland, writes. So look, there's some lovely glowing praise that I won't share, right? But basically we read out an email of his a while back, and it went down very well in the White House. And that is Graham, your email made us laugh enormously. So thank you very much. But this is lovely. And this is a good thing. We have heard of other examples of this, and it's lovely to hear more. Right, here we go. Another thing I wanted to say is about the influence of your podcast. I love listening to you and Tim talking about comedians I hadn't heard of, and I'm lucky that a lot of them come to Glasgow. I always take a note of anyone you make a big deal about, and there are plenty of them who have ended up with another 4 tickets sold due to you recommending them. The Glasgow Comedy Festival starts next week, and in amongst my established act purchases, Stuart Lee, Richard Herring, Ed Gamble, Nick Helm, etc. I'm also going to check out Paddy Young and Jacob Hawley, and we checked out Celia AB when she was up a few weeks ago, and we've got Alexandra Haddow in April. Just wanted you to know that you directly influence who us comedy fans go and see, so make sure you get your cut the next time they're at the Tommy Field. Thank you very much. Yes, that is lawyers' letters in the post and so on. Graham, thank you. That meant a great deal. Now, Tim, one of the things we wanted to talk about before we get to Julia Louis-Dreyfus, this isn't a running gag, by the way, where we keep saying before we get to Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and then we wrap up. David Letterman once did it. He had a running gag all week, Monday through Friday. And the gag was, our final guest is Norm MacDonald. And the gag was that Norm got bumped. It was just a joke. And then on the Friday, he brings Norm MacDonald out just to wave. Just to say, such a great Letterman gag that, but just to acknowledge, oh yeah, it was just a joke. He was never booked. We were going to bump him every night. We're not doing that. So one of the things we wanted to talk about is it's the state of live comedy, I suppose, and it's off the back of London's Vault Festival not returning due to not getting funding. Now this is a real shame, Tim, not just for everyone associated with Vaults. It's a shame for comedy fans, and it's a real shame for comedians as well.
Yeah, it was really really sad story to come out. Vaults Festival was something I went to a few times. Even outside comedy, I know for theatre people, it was a hugely important place for people to like establish new stars and stuff. And I think it's going to be hugely missed. And it was always a big thing this time of year, Vault Festival, to where a lot of acts started previewing their new work in London. And I think it is a scary time, I hate to say. Like, we've lost Vault Festival, Just for Laughs in Canada, a huge comedy institution. They've announced they've had to file for bankruptcy, having started in like the 80s. It's a funny old time, and I don't really know.
And by funny, Tim obviously means not funny. by funny, Tim means heartbreaking.
So yeah, Just for Laughs. Just for Laughs was one of like the first things you hear about in comedy that's like outside Britain. It was, if you didn't know, it was a huge Canadian comedy festival And it was going until last year, and I sort of hope it can continue again. But they had like the iconic green goblin thing.
Yeah.
Like the thing I really recognize. I really recognize the logo. They had a London festival last year, which I was delighted to have a very small part in. Just for Laughs is such an exciting thing. And it is worrying and very sad to hear that like they had to file for bankruptcy. I don't know the reason why, but I know people who work there, and my heart goes out to them.
Total agreement. Just for Laughs, as a huge comedy fan, was a it was on Channel 4. Jimmy Mulville and I think Muriel Gray were the hosts, and it opened my then teenage eyes to the likes of Bill Hicks, Dennis Leary, and many, many more. There was the famous Jerry Sadovitz story where he gets booked into the main auditorium. He opens by saying "Hello, moose fuckers," because he's in Canada. A guy gets out of the audience and like fully decks him. I'm pretty sure, if memory serves, Hicks and Leary are interviewed to talk about the incident. I mean, it all felt very exciting. Mike Wilmot was another guy that I first saw on Just for Laughs. And so to find that out was, yeah, as Tim says, really sad. You know, a couple of other venues having a tough time of it. And the thing with Vault as well, Tim, is that was a place where some of the more alternative, less mainstream acts, where they got to do their thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I know, like, very accomplished, like, fringe acts, such like Joz Norris and Stevie Martin and so on. Like, they really... Vaults Festival is often where like the process all began, and we're going to miss it. I don't really, there's just not as many spaces who do what Vaults Festival were doing nearly to the level they were doing it at. I really hope something can come in and replace it, but I don't know, it's looking bleak. I don't know what that can be at this stage.
Tim, the future of live comedy, I mean, what happens now? Because it does feel, oh man, I mean, it's not just things like that. There are people with tour shows where it can be tough out there. I mean, ultimately it all comes back to the cost of living crisis.
It does. That is really it. It's just like, I'm sure if we spoke to every industry on earth, I'm sure they're facing similar problems. However, comedy is the one we can talk about best.
I mean, so you're that is an important thing to say, because I'm otherwise, if you'd not said that, I'm making it sound like it's just comedy and nothing else. Obviously, it's across the board. It's a general cost of living crisis. It's not as if, because I mean, the way some comedians speak, and I have to include myself in that, the way I was speaking, you would just think that this was a problem exclusive to comedy, and obviously it's not. It's being felt everywhere, because if you are a random member of public and you're looking to save a few bob, you're probably going to knock on the head that trip to the theatre, that music gig, that comedy night, that pub quiz, and so on. It's just, I mean, everyone everywhere is feeling the squeeze, Tim. I mean, also, Tim, you know, we're both grateful dudes. I mean, every person that comes through the door, always be comedy. If we could unfurl some sort of prayer mat and, like, you know, pay homage to them, you know, every person that comes to every gig, it's not lost on us. We are super grateful. But Tim, you know, we work, I mean, let's go with bloody, because I was going to go with a much stronger word. We have to work. Let's go with very. We have to work very, very hard. I mean, you know, we're pretty much five nights a week, some nights six nights a week, often double shows. That's not me saying other places are struggling. Aren't we doing a great job? I'm not saying that for a second. What I am saying is we're super grateful for every ticket that we sell, because we know that it's hard out there.
Yeah, it's quite tricky, because like, it is really hard out there. But also, there's more comedians on tour than I can ever remember. So it's really, it's such an interesting, funny old time, because on one hand, more and more comedians are able to find their own audience and tour due to things like Instagram, social media, whatever. But then, I don't know, maybe, I don't know what it is. And that's what I quite like about this. Like, it can be a conversation. There's no definites. There's a lot of people on tour at the moment. And I guess, as a result, if you live in a small provincial town and you've got 7 comedians coming to you this month, you're not going to be able to afford to go to all of them.
Once again, nail on head. I suppose what we're saying, Tim, in a very roundabout way, is please, for the love of God, keep coming to Always Be Comedy.
yeah. Or, look, support your local comedy club. It's important.
That's a good shout. Yeah, if you live in Aberystwyth and it's not as, obviously we appreciate you can't get to Kennington every night of the week, but there might be a comedy night near wherever you live. That's you know what, my sister has started going to her local comedy night and WhatsApps, actually, as you know, because I often read out her WhatsApps me every week about the acts that she's seen. But that's lovely, you know. She saw Josh P recently off the back of me raving about him and was suitably blown away. Also, Tim, I mean, there was a thing a few years ago, maybe 10 years ago, maybe a bit less, where the chat on the circuit was, there are way too many comedians, right? There are way too many comedians. I don't think you hear that anymore, Tim. I don't think that conversation is had in the way that it was being had 10 years ago, because more comedy nights and venues and what have you are dwindling. And therefore, I guess more comedians having to go, this is not sustainable, and having to pivot back to proper job or whatever that might be, or doing comedy or as more of a hobby on top of a job, which is obviously completely understandable. Is that a fair comment, that people don't have that conversation in the way that they used to?
Yeah, I think that is fair. Like, it's very rare you come across someone who is just a full-time comedian. All their money is from gigging on the circuit. Like, we talk about all the time. It's quite hard to say it's a very hard life. But, like, it's hard to make that your full-time job. I will say that.
Oh, I mean, really difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I don't really know how people do it. Yeah.
Now, one person whose full-time job is comedy is Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Superb. Absolutely superb.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Tim, it's fair to say that we are both fans.
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely. Like, when we're thinking of names for this, she was so, so high on the list. Yeah, I think she's just absolutely incredible. I've really been getting back into Seinfeld in the last year or so, because it's all on Netflix now. And yeah, she is one for best.
When I first started watching Seinfeld, it's not really a brag. I was going to say, I watched it when it was first on. Yeah, mate, it was the biggest TV show in the world. Don't make it like it was wasn't some sort of sleeper hit. But my favourite was always George Costanza, right?
Mm.
And then on repeat viewing, is she not the best one?
She really might be the best one. Yeah, she's incredible.
The dance, when she does the dance. She's one of those people, all round great performer. And then I know I always come back to physicality. Her fit, you cannot understate the quality of her physical comedy. Now, before we get to Seinfeld, Tim and I were doing our homework on Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I want to get this one out of the way early doors. She's the daughter of a billionaire. Now, this is not a hot take. It's safe to say that the children of incredibly successful and wealthy people can often struggle to find their place in the world. There's lots of examples of that. And this sounds odd. I sort of admire her more for achieving what she's achieved, given it would have been very human to put her feet up and know that there were billions on their way.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The whole Nepo baby thing. What I'd say is she's achieved a whole lot more, and I've enjoyed her work a whole lot more than most billionaires' children.
No, I think she made it in spite. No, I don't. My parents are not billionaires, so I can't really speak from experience here. But from what I understand, Tim, she made it in spite of her. I can hear people laughing at this take. I think she made it in spite of her billionaire dad, rather than because. What I mean is, I don't think he opened any doors. So, for example, Ben Stiller. I love Ben Stiller, but I know Ben Stiller has acknowledged that his famous parents did play a part in him catching a break. Whereas with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, all right, I suppose you can argue that she knows that she can go for it and go for auditions and try a hand at stuff, because I guess you know that there's going to be a stupendously rich person there to theoretically help you out. But nevertheless, she didn't have it easy. So she joins the Practical Theatre Company and then ends up on Saturday Night Live aged 21. Now, some of you will be going, I didn't know that Julia Louis-Dreyfus was on Saturday Night Live. And it's because it wasn't, I mean, she was there for a good couple of years. So it's not like, you wouldn't say that she was a flop. However, she's not synonymous with Saturday Night Live. You know, with Saturday Night Live, you immediately go Bill Murray, Will Ferrell, Dana Carvey, Kristen Wiig, Amy Poehler, Tina Fey, on and on and on, right? You wouldn't go Julia Louis-Dreyfus. So, she was on the early 80s. But Tim, you know that I love SNL, but what I would say is their track record is patchy when it comes to people who didn't quite flourish in the way that they might have done, or people who were never actually picked in the first place. For example, Julia Louis-Dreyfus would be one example. It's obviously Seinfeld that catapults her into the stratosphere. Jim Carrey auditioned for SNL and wasn't picked. So they're not bulletproof.
I mean, I didn't know that about Jim Carrey. That's absolutely mad. I'd say in each class, let's put it, there are, I guess you hope for about one or two potential megastars. What do you think?
Absolutely. And also, some people have to leave the show in order to catch their big break, which I know sounds absolutely potty. But say someone like Chris Rock, I would say, became a megastar after leaving SNL. Now, I enjoyed him. I used to watch the show when he was on it, and he's part of that iconic Sandler, Farley, Spade, you know, that era. But Chris Rock really becomes Chris Rock once he's left the show. Ben Stiller, I'll mention him again. It didn't quite happen for him on SNL. And then he leaves the show. He makes the Ben Stiller show for MTV, wins an Emmy. And that got cancelled, but wins the Emmy, then becomes a movie star. So it's, I'm as you know, I'm fascinated by that show. And even a fan of the show and the history of the show, such as me, even I will acknowledge that if you were to sit and watch an episode from start to finish, I mean, I'll be diplomatic because I do love the show. Let's just say that not every sketch is a banger. And then also some sketches go on for what feels like literally 10 full minutes. I mean, some of the early seasons, oh my gosh, if you open some of the early sketches on YouTube and you press play and you look at the little minute counter and you're like, this can't go on for this long. Especially when you consider some of the great sketches of all time on other shows might clock in at under a minute, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, then Julia Louis-Dreyfus. We're skipping forward a bit. She appears in a few films. The Gill family watched National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, and I completely forgot who appears as the snooty neighbour, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. So she does pop up in things before she's a full on superstar. But yes. Seinfeld runs 1990 to 1998. She is, I mean, to be fair, all four of them are, I mean, that's b- part of the magic of that show. All four of them are absolute rock stars on that show. And as Elaine, she is extraordinary. And also, Tim, that show is one of, I mean, again, not a hot take, one of the biggest shows in the history of television. Have you ever seen Larry King, Jerry Seinfeld on Larry King, and Larry King...
Oh, my God.
Asks, yeah. Larry King asks Jerry if Seinfeld was cancelled.
Yeah, I would say... I really like Jerry Seinfeld. I think he's obviously brilliant, but I've seen people come off better than he does in that section.
Let me just say, if you've not seen the clip, go on YouTube. It's worth a watch. What I would say is, I know that I would have reacted, and I'm not defending it, I would have reacted in exactly the same way as Jerry Seinfeld. Because Jerry Seinfeld, he's on CNN, and he's also he's a clean guy, doesn't swear. But what he wants to say is, and I don't want to swear now, are you chuffing joking? And so, you know, Jerry says something like, can someone get Larry my resume or something like that? And Jerry cannot believe that Larry King thought that Seinfeld was cancelled. Anyway, it obviously was not cancelled. Now, Julia Louis-Dreyfus's run on Seinfeld, it kickstarts this run of nominations and wins. And I'm going to give you this stat now. So we said on Tuesday's Rachel Paris episode that there is an argument that Julie Louis-Dreyfus is the ultimate TV star. And what I mean by that is, I know that some of you will be shouting like Dick Van Dyke or James Gandolfini, perhaps the Sopranos lovers. Anyway, but the reason why I say that is that Julie Louis-Dreyfus has more Primetime Emmy Awards and Screen Actors Guild Awards than anyone else in history. So if you were to get into that hypothetical pub debate as to who the biggest TV star ever is, I mean, it could rage on or not, but if you were to bring stats to the table, there you go. Tim, who else would you argue? Would you put in the conversation?
I'd say pretty much all of the cast of Friends. I would say there was a time when Bryan Cranston felt like the biggest TV star on earth.
Great shout! Yes. Now here's an interesting bit of trivia. On one of the DVDs, there's a commentary on one of the Seinfeld DVDs where it's revealed that they got the commission for the show because, I mean, crikey, because they, on the condition that they added a woman to the cast.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
Yeah. I mean, the awful thing is I can, but yeah, it's absolutely, it sounds absolutely mad. It sounds so mad.
I mean, also, can you imagine, like, because it was, you know, late 80s, the show starts in 1990, so maybe it was, you know, maybe this conversation was happening in late 80s. But can you imagine, somebody somewhere has gone, all right, you'll get the commission on the condition that you had a woman. And there's probably someone going, well, this is political correctness.
Yeah.
Gone mad.
I guess, like, imagine being forced to cast Julia Louis-Dreyfus into your show and not just being a thing which you'd be on your hands and knees to do.
Yeah, exactly. So Seinfeld ends after 9 seasons. Jerry calls time. The final episode, mate, 76 million. All right, I know the USA is a bigger country, but nevertheless, 76 million viewers tune in to the final episode.
I mean, it's just, that is inconceivable. That's more, that's everyone in Britain and more.
That's more than the population of Britain, isn't it?
Yeah, that's just incredible. Wow.
We just because we were fearful that somebody might email in to say, oh, I think you'll find that is correct. The population of Britain, around 67 million. So more people than are in all of Britain tuned in for the finale of Seinfeld. So if you've never seen Seinfeld, we appreciate that there might be younger listeners. Seinfeld told the story of a comedian called Jerry, and he had friends. There was Kramer, the wacky guy who lived in the same apartment building. There was his friend George Costanza, and they had dated on the show. That was the thing, wasn't it? They were exes, but they were close friends. His close friend Elaine, and the four of them. It was TV gold. And what the part of the genius of Seinfeld, and the running gag about Seinfeld, Tim, is that it was about nothing. Oh, also a friend of mine, Martin Kellner, a great broadcaster and great writer. He loves Seinfeld because they had a rule on the show, no hugging.
Oh, really?
Now, what he means by... Now, maybe there is a bit where they have a... But what they meant by that was they never wanted any schmaltz. Because of a lot of American TV shows, they love to learn a lesson and they'll hug at the end. And the moral of the story is blah, 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 blah. Now, as a schmaltzy guy, I don't mind. I actually don't mind some of that. But nevertheless, the big thing, given that the two driving forces were Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld, no hugging was this big rule because they didn't want anyone to learn a lesson. They quite liked the characters could be quite reprehensible. They could be quite selfish. Kramer is an obnoxious guy, and yet, like Arthur Fonzarelli before him, they often had to wait for the audience to die down because Kramer was such a fan favorite because he was so wacky and because they couldn't wait to see how Michael Richards would skid into Jerry's apartment and then that would get a big ovation. I mean, he was a popular guy. Now, I have to flag, obviously, it's been very well documented, Michael Richards got himself into a real tangle at a comedy night. He doesn't need us to add to any sort of kicking on the guy. It was also fully addressed in episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm. However, what I will bring to the table, Tim, there's a YouTube, someone has done a YouTube compilation and it's Michael Richards not being cool with, Tim's a giggler, I'm a giggler, but it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus cracking up and Michael Richards not having a great time.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's like most bloopers videos are meant to be total joy. You think like The Office, things like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, all those shows, like for bloopers, like, God, these guys are having so much fun on set. And then that's like a whole new genre of outtakes. It's absolutely, it's brutal at times.
Mate, have you seen Richard Lewis passed away recently. Have you seen the one where Larry David is laughing so hard that he spits his water out?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I mean,
God. Yeah.
That is, if you're ever feeling down in the dumps, that is a mental health booster. But it's on YouTube. I would recommend it. It's not a mental health booster because it makes you fit. We love Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I love her even more because I don't like him not being cool with her cracking up. Because she, as Tim says, pure joy. She's having this joyous moment. But because I think he, and there's nothing wrong with taking comedy seriously. Crikey, it's Tim and I take it way too seriously. But because Michael Richards takes his craft and the craft of comedy and the craft of acting, and he's obviously got very specific bits. There's a bit with a pipe. So I do get, that. But she's cracking up and you can see his vibe is very much, are you kidding me? And he sort of cannot cope with her cracking up. But for me, it just makes me love her more because she's obviously, she's a human being. And when something goes wrong, she laughs at it. Also, it's not just Elaine, sorry, Julia, it's not just Elaine where he's not having a good time. It's, there's scenes where Jerry's cracking up as well. It's just Michael Richards in general not enjoying his co-stars cracking up. If you want to find it, it's called Michael Richards doesn't like when his co-stars mess up. It has had more than 6 million views. I mean, it's a lot of people have sought it out. And as one commenter says, ironic how the goofiest character is the most professional. I get the gag. It's not really fair because the other three are absolute consummate pros. Now, before we move on, sidebar, have you ever noticed how much George Costanza changes from the earliest episodes? He's sort of doing it like Woody Allen in the pilot.
Oh, well, please elaborate.
So George Costanza, the character is it's Jason Alexander, but I think it's the pilot or certainly the first couple of episodes, he's almost like, I can't do a Woody Allen, but he's almost playing like, I don't want to come across as didactic, but he's doing that, I'll be honest with you, that's the best I'm ever going to do it. But he's sort of playing it like that, and then obviously Jason Alexander finds his groove and plays it like the neurotic mess that he is. Obviously, not obviously, because not everyone knows this, but the George Costanza character is Larry David. So that is the inspiration for that character. The grouch, the grump. I mean, he's obviously a lot more than that. He's, again, one of the great sitcom characters of all time. So now, I will be honest, Tim, before we settled on Julia Louis-Dreyfus, I naively and wrongly thought that she effortlessly jumped from Seinfeld to Veep. And that is not true. There's actually, there's a meaty chunk between the two shows. And that is where Julia Louis-Dreyfus, I mean, you know, God bless her, tries, very patronizing, tries various movies, TV shows with mixed success. I hope she doesn't mind me saying that. But then when Veep comes along, now she's obviously brilliant in Seinfeld. And really, she could have, you know, she could have called it a day there, and she's responsible for one of the greatest sitcom performances ever. But maybe this is a controversial take, maybe it's not. In Veep, she is another level. And I will say this. Her performance in Veep, when you're talking about the top 10 greatest performances in sitcom history, it is high up on the list. It is up there with Ronnie Barker in Porridge. It is up there with John Cleese in Fawlty Towers. I would put Julia Louis-Dreyfus in Veep right up there. It's a faultless performance. She's out of her depth. She's ambitious. She's rude. She's obnoxious. She can be a bully. But yet it says so much for her as a performer that I always want Selena Myers to win. I'm so on her side. I love the character. I mean, there's a scene where she's awful to Tony Hale's character. Really, I mean, like, annihilates him. And, she's so cruel. But even as you're watching it, you're going, oh, this dude is just on another planet. Now, Veep tells the story of Selena Meyer and her surrounding staff. Selena Meyer, I suppose it's one of the reasons, I suppose, why a lot of British people love it is it's that thwarted ambition. Think of like Captain Mannering in Dad's Army. It's the person who is striving for the next level but might not have the chops to take them to the next level and everything that entails. And you just get such comedy mileage out of that. I mean, Partridge is the similar sort of thing. Basil Fawlty is the similar sort of thing. Del Boy, I mean, you could go on and on. There's so much comedy mileage in thwarted ambition, in as I say, trying to just not quite. And oh man, what such a very special show. Wonderful. Also, trivia fans, her performance in that, she won 6 consecutive Primetime Emmy Awards.
Oh my God.
6 consecutive.
That's sort of hard to get your head around. Yeah, that is absolutely incredible.
Our friend Brett Goldstein won 2 Emmys on the bounce for playing Roy Kent. To be fair, when you're talking about Julia Louis-Dreyfus winning 6 on the bounce and what a big deal that is, it actually gives me even more respect for what Brett achieved.
Oh my God, absolutely. Yeah. Brett winning those Emmys, just one of some of my favourite nights of my life. I used to see Brett like MC quite ropey gigs years ago, and then he became one of the most recognisable British people in Hollywood.
Brett has been with ABC from the off, 12 and a half years at the time of recording. I've said this to Brett's face, we've enjoyed Brett's move to US megastardom probably more than Brett has. Did you see the pictures of Brett at the Oscars this week?
Yeah, beautiful man. A Hollywood hunk.
Yeah, absolute, living the dream, and deservedly so.
And can I just say, ABC is not one of those ropey gigs. That was one of the good gigs I saw him at.
Oh, Brett and I still talk about the ropey non-ABC gigs that we used to do.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
And we won't have it any other way. I'm not alone in saying this. Veep was a show. If Always Be Comedy Online and Tuesday Nightclub, if that was your thing that got you through lockdown, Veep was definitely one of the things that got me through lockdown. Tim, what's your take on Veep?
So there's two things I absolutely love about Veep. One, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is the lead, and she really gets to show like her full capability as an actor and especially a comedic actor. I think it's so great for her to have. It's sort of like, to some extent, comes out of nowhere. Like Seinfeld ended in the late 90s, as we said. Veep starts in 2011. So, like, she really properly comes back slightly out of nowhere with a like absolute massive bang. And yeah, that I just can't believe. Yeah, she's just so great in it. So funny. The other thing I love is it's Armando Iannucci, of course, and him getting a big HBO hit. Us big, like, Partridge fans, it's such a win. It feels like a win for us. I love it so much. Armando Iannucci's big American breakthrough.
Yeah, I mean, as always, Tim hitting the nail squarely on the head. One of the great things about Veep as well, we're obviously singling out Julia Louis-Dreyfus, but the thing about Veep is the cast, it was just an absolute murderer's row. The whole cast were brilliant. It worked. I mean, it was perfect. And also, crucially, what they did with Veep, they stuck the landing. I won't spoil it, but the final episode and the ending of the final episode is chef's kiss. I can scarcely think of a better ending to a long-running, beloved show. They absolutely nail it. If you've never seen Veep, I mean, I'm sure you have, do yourself a favour. Now, I know that we really skipped over the years in between Seinfeld and Veep, and that's because some of those shows, I just don't think they were even shown over here. So I know there was The New Adventures of Old Christine. If that was shown over here, I apologise profusely. It ran for 5 seasons. She did bag an Emmy for it, as I say. But it just wasn't, it just didn't have the same cultural impact as Seinfeld and Veep. But then again, what did? These are two of the biggest shows in the history of not just TV comedy, but TV, full stop. I've got so much love and respect and admiration for someone who, there's something very inspiring about someone who doesn't put their feet up, and not just that, but they get better and better with each passing year. She's obviously great as Elaine in Seinfeld, but Veep, as I say, that is an absolute. In fact, Tim, you know full well that I will probably go away and do my top 10 greatest sitcom performances of all time. I think she's top five. Also, sorry, get my high horse here. The difference is that our British shows, I'm not knocking the shows that I love, but some of them only run for like 12 episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And look, I've said I'm quite often a fan of The Office and Fawlty Towers and stuff. 12 episodes, that's your lot. But yeah, being able to put out as many episodes of, well, Seinfeld and Veep especially, there's a lot of episodes there. And it's so hard to keep the quality up. But look, when you've got Larry David or Iannucci writing, I mean, good God. Yeah, the quality, it just stays there the whole time. It's astonishing.
She was also, she did a very smart thing. Julia Louis-Dreyfus appears in Curb Your Enthusiasm, and one of the plots is Larry David comes up with a show format, pitches it to his friend, obviously in the show, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and the format of the show is a sitcom actress trying and struggling to find a hit because they've been so synonymous with another show. And in the scene, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is mulling it over. Is she offended? And then she's sort of like, Larry, you son of a gun. That's a great idea. but I've such a soft spot for self-awareness, and by sort of acknowledging it and putting it out there, You know, I mean, I don't know. She's an absolute mensch. So Veep, 65 episodes. Wow. Seinfeld, 180 episodes.
Oh my God.
Tim, Friends, 236 episodes. And my all-time favourite, Cheers, 273 episodes.
Bloody hell. Just that is just incredible. Presumably you've seen all 273 episodes of Cheers.
I've definitely seen all 273 episodes.
Wow.
Of Cheers.
God. Well, yeah, I've probably seen all the Friends episodes, to be fair. My God.
I've definitely seen every episode of Friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. That was a real thing in the mid-noughties. The E4 double bill of Friends was, it got me through secondary school.
This is the thing, as a couple of absolute anoraks, this show runs forever because there's so much out there. Curb Your Enthusiasm. I mean, I would never have guessed it was as many episodes as this. 110 episodes.
Yeah. And look, a lot of these shows we're talking about are real comfort watches for me. I think there's a real thing there with the long, long-running sitcom. It's just you can sort of put it on whenever you want. Flo and Joan talked about this in their most recent episode of Us. You can put it on any series and you just know. You can just sit back. Those 20 minutes will fly by and it's just great. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus has several of those in her back catalogue.
Yes. Now, please keep your suggestions coming in for upcoming episodes of Comedy Heroes. Mark Williams writes in, my ultimate comedy hero is Don Rickles. If you ever discuss him, then I'm all ears. Absolute hero to me. I even come out to his walk-on song at my shows. He invented the, quote, celebrity roast, and no one has ever come anywhere near touching him since. Regards, Mark Williams, Magic 4 Events Limited. Love it.
I love it. I love it so much. The comedy roast, it's a thing I really wish we did more of over here. And yeah, what a insane legacy for some to have.
Who's the greatest roaster you've ever seen? Or do you have a favourite roaster?
My favourite roast segment ever, but it's because it's very postmodern and goes against the whole idea, is Norm Macdonald roasting
Bob Saget.
Yeah, Bob Saget. Because he just does retirement jokes, essentially. And it's intentionally rubbish. And that just sums up Norm Macdonald perfectly. But
he basically, from what I've interviewed Bob Saget, crikey.
Again, wow.
The late, great Bob Saget.
Absolutely.
I just don't think Norm wanted to roast someone that he loved. And so I think Bob Saget basically said, Norm, you know, I would love to have you there. So Norm did it. And obviously, because he didn't want to hurt his friend's feelings, deliberately made them like really gentle, oldie-timey, quite folksy jokes. So sweet. And look, he knows what he's doing. He knows that he's turned up to a bazooka fight with a paper aeroplane, basically.
Yeah.
So he knows he's going to get annihilated. He knows he's going down like Willem Dafoe in Platoon. I know you shouldn't say comedy's brave, but I think there was bravery to. I mean, that's why people still talk about that set, because there was bravery to it.
Such bravery. Do you have a favourite?
Greg Giraldo.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Very good.
Again, oh my God. Again, late, great Greg Giraldo.
God. Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah.
I was watching, see what I watched last night. I watch these videos a lot, and it's Super Dave Osborne with Adam Egert and Norm Macdonald. And while I'm watching it, the penny drops that Adam is the only one who's still alive.
Oh, that's absolutely brutal.
Anyway, let's keep the laughter coming. So if you've got a comedy hero suggestion, Rickles would be a really good one. And I've actually read his autobiography. So Oh, I've got that. I know a couple of great Rickles stories as well. All very warm and positive. He's a very, very likable, avuncular figure. One of the things I love about Rickles is that apparently he would have people walk past him and they would go, "Do me, do me," and he'd have to like, in the middle of he's like out doing his shopping, and he would have to like roast a member of the public, and then the guy would be like, "Yay!" You know, he's just like annihilated him. It's so funny.
Brilliant. That's brilliant.
Mark, that's a really good suggestion. Keep the emails coming in. Comedy Hero in the title. We are the team at alwaysbecomedy.com. Thank you very much as always. Tim, thank you as always. Mate, I love doing these. These are a blast.
Yeah, so much fun. I think I know who I want for episode 3. So keep them peeled.
I am flattered. Fantastic. Also, if there's something that you would like us to talk about, like there might be like a really obvious topic in comedy, and we can cover that in our newsy bit up top. I think this week with Vault not happening, we sort of, it is an elephant in the room, Tim, and it just sort of needed live comedy needed talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd like to pay tribute to Vault this week. So yeah, very happy to do that.
Yeah, perfect. Tim, thank you as always. Have a great week. We're back Tuesday with another banger. Tim, who is it on Tuesday?
Milton Jones.
Very, very good. He was, it will come as no surprise, absolutely brilliant. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye, 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 bye.